You're listening to the CyberWire Network, powered by N2K.
Hey, everybody. Today, I want to highlight a name that all of us know well, and that is our sponsor, Splunk. You need to keep operations humming around the clock, but potential disruptions are everywhere. Splunk helps you predict problems and find and fix issues fast so you can reduce risk and ditch downtime. The world's largest enterprises rely on Splunk's unified security and observability platform to become more efficient, resilient, and innovative. With Splunk, you can react quickly, evolve faster, and be ready for anything. Stay ahead of disruptions. Learn more at splunk.com/resilience. And we thank Splunk for sponsoring our show. In the dynamic world of enterprise security, identity architects and IT leaders face a major challenge. Growth by repeated acquisitions multiplies the complexity of everything. Multiple IDPs, MFA providers, policy engines that all need to coexist. This can lead to fragmented user identities and policies that create security vulnerabilities and add access friction. Strata Identity solves this. Now you can decommission unneeded IDPs and consolidate the ones you'd like to keep without rewriting apps or disrupting users, engineers, and app owners. Plus, Strata's modular architecture makes it easy to integrate with any identity provider without manual maintenance and coding. Join the ranks of cybersecurity leaders using identity orchestration. Visit strata.io/cyberwire, share your top identity security priorities, and receive a pair of complimentary AirPods Pro. Offer valid for organizations with over 5,000 employees. Step into a new era of identity management at strata.io/cyberwire.
Citizen Lab finds and Apple patches a zero-day used for zero-click installation of Pegasus spyware. A Cobalt Strike beacon has been turned to cyber espionage use against Linux targets. The Russian government could, it seems, take action against cybercrime, but its will to enforcement seems to be inconsistent. Ben Yellen from UMD CHHS with more on Apple's CSAM controversy. Our guest is Mel Shakir from Dream It Ventures on selling to CISOs and their customer sprints. Our evil makes nice with grumpy affiliates. And criminals' commitment to the common good seems weak. That's not a surprise, right? From the CyberWire studios at DataTribe, I'm Elliot Peltzman, filling in for Dave Bittner, with your CyberWire summary for Tuesday, September 14th, 2021. During its investigation of a Pegasus spyware infection of a Saudi activist's iPhone, the University of Toronto's Citizen Lab has found a zero-day, zero-click exploit against iMessage. They call the exploit forced entry, say it targets Apple's image rendering library, and claim that it's effective against Apple iOS, macOS, and watchOS devices. Forced entry is a zero-click attack requiring no obvious user interaction. Victims may be unaware that their devices have been affected. Malicious files masquerading as GIFs were the infection mechanism, and they arrived courtesy of an unremarked bug in Apple's image rendering. As Apple put in their description of the vulnerability, quote, processing a maliciously crafted PDF may lead to arbitrary code execution, end quote. In this case, the arbitrary code would be the Pegasus Intercept product. The Wall Street Journal reports that NSO Group, maker of Pegasus, has apparently been exploiting the vulnerability since February. The company, asked for comment, simply told the journal, quote, NSO Group will continue to provide intelligence and law enforcement agencies around the world with life-saving technologies to fight terror and crime, end quote, which is one way of looking at it. Citizen Lab and Apple made fairly short work of patching. Citizen Lab forwarded Apple suspicious artifacts on September 7th, Apple confirmed that they included a zero-day exploit on the 13th, and late yesterday also addressed the vulnerability with an update to iOS 14.8. Users are advised to upgrade their devices as soon as practicable. Subsequent releases of iOS will also be designed, Cupertino says, to keep this particular backdoor firmly shut. We have a roundup of industry reaction and advice to force entry in this afternoon's pro-privacy briefing. Intezer has discovered a criminal version of Cobalt Strike's beacon, Vermilion Strike, they're calling it, used by unknown threat actors against both Windows and Linux systems. Vermilion Strike may be the work of a gang, but its sophistication and evident interest in espionage could also suggest that it might have been developed and deployed by a nation-state's intelligence service. But both provenance and attribution remain unclear. Intezer thinks the Linux attacks most noteworthy, if only because their lower detection rates can lead to Linux exploits being overlooked. Quote, Vermilion Strike and other Linux threats remain a constant threat. The predominance of Linux servers in the cloud and its continued rise invites APTs to modify their toolsets in order to navigate the existing environment. End quote. CSO thinks that recent events have revealed that Russian government is fully capable of shutting down cyber gangs, if it wants to, and that some disruptions of criminal activity may indicate that U.S. sanctions are having some limited effect. That Russia could, if it wished, take action against cybercrime seems beyond serious dispute. Controlling the gangs would seem to be more a matter of want to than it is can do, as football coaches are wont to say about tackling. But encouraging signs of better behavior seem thin. CSO cites as evidence of a little bit of want to Roskomnadzor's blocking, a week and a half ago, of several VPN services that were used for various purposes criminal under Russian law, including drug trafficking, child pornography distribution, extremism, and promotion or facilitation of suicide. The services blocked included some familiar names. Hola VPN, ExpressVPN, KeepSolid VPN Unlimited, NordVPN, Speedify VPN, and IPVanish VPN. None of these, we can't help but observe, are Russian operations. They hail, respectively, from Israel, the British Virgin Islands, New York, Panama, Philadelphia, and Dallas. Nary a Chelyabinsk among them, which offers a partial explanation, perhaps, of the want to on display in these cases. It's also worth noting that they all have legitimate users, and users which and whom, Roskomnadzor says, it's whitelisted. CSO also cites the arrests of some senior FSB figures in December 2016 and January 2017 as evidence of potential want to. But those personnel were arrested and convicted on treason-related charges. They'd been sharing information on cybercrime with Western law enforcement agencies. Those arrests occurred before the latest round of U.S. protests and sanctions, however. One of the Russian gangs that was imperfectly controlled, R-Evil, is now pretty clearly back in business, ThreatPost confirms. They say that the decryptor released to Kaseya was all a mistake, the fat-fingered fumbling of one of their operators, who's now presumably on whatever counts as a performance improvement plan in the underworld. Whether Fingers of Size actually had anything to do with it or not, R-Evil is back, and trying to make it all up with their disgruntled affiliates, who've complained to the gangland arbitration panels that apparently form from time to time in various dark corners of the dark web. R-Evil seems to have refunded payments to criminal affiliates who felt they've been shafted by comping them to make them whole again. So expect to see more R-Evil. And finally, various gangs have sought to wear Robin Hood's hat, claiming they act not against the common good, but only against the wealthy. Wealthy elite, as the shadow brokers used to say. And by the way, where are those guys? We kind of miss them. But a recent cyber attack on Jefferson Parish, Louisiana, courts should move us toward reluctant skepticism about whether such public spirit is widespread in gangland. An unspecified gang took advantage of the distraction of Hurricane Ida to install unspecified malware in the court's networks, NOLA.com reports. The courts are expected to recover soon.
And now, a word from our sponsor, Zscaler, the leader in cloud security. Cyber attackers are using AI in creative ways to compromise users and breach organizations. In a security landscape where you must fight AI with AI, the best AI protection comes from having the best data. Zscaler has extended its zero-trust architecture with powerful AI engines that are trained and tuned by 500 trillion daily signals. Learn more about Zscaler Zero Trust Plus AI to prevent ransomware and AI attacks. Experience your world secured. Visit zscaler.com/zero-trust-AI. Don't struggle to align your organization's cybersecurity with business risk. Get the only solution that goes beyond reacting to threats with vulnerability and risk monitoring. You need the next evolution of MDR, and only Critical Start delivers it. Critical Start doesn't just monitor and respond to threats. They put you in control by detecting suspicious activities, quickly responding to contain threats, and identifying your most critical assets and protecting them against vulnerabilities and exposures. With continuous visibility, expert guidance, and measurable risk reduction, Critical Start has redefined what it means to manage cyber risk. Demonstrate provable security maturity to your leadership while positioning your program to achieve the greatest risk reduction per dollar spent. Stop fearing risk and start managing it with Critical Start. Visit CriticalStart.com and request a demo today. That's CriticalStart.com.
Let's face it. If you're on the sales and marketing side of the house, one of the challenges you likely face is getting quality time pitching your wares to CISOs. Mel Shakir is Managing Director for Security Investments at Dreamit Ventures, a venture fund for startups. When I recently spoke with him, he emphasized networking and, not surprisingly, taking advantage of opportunities provided by VCs like himself.
My background, again, is in cybersecurity. I've spent almost 20-plus years working in this field and have a deep intrinsic knowledge in the cyberspace itself. That matters because even for us to be able to pick the right companies that we want to invest in, that is an important part of the equation. Also, you know, good understanding of the trends and where the industry is going, anticipating, you know, what the CISO's needs are now and what they're going to be in the future. All of those things factor in, you know, when we make an investment in the company. So again, these are highly filtered. I do product deep dives. In early calls, many of the startups who reach out to us, they get surprised that I'm not just talking about all the other aspects of the business. The very first question I ask is, you know, can you do a product demo? I want to do a deep dive of the product. Get me excited about the product, then we'll talk about everything else. So yes, you know, having a deep understanding of the product, the technology, that is important. I need to be able to communicate that also to the CISOs.
Are there any common mistakes that folks make in their interactions with CISOs? Are there things that you shouldn't do because it'll really just turn them off at the outset?
Yeah, I think CISOs are very technical by nature. So, you know, one of the things I always tell founders is, you know, take your A team when you're meeting CISOs, for one. The other important thing is preparation, right? Before you go to meet with a CISO, have an understanding of why they are meeting you. And there are a number of ways you can get to that information. You could be, in some cases, you might be able to reach out to the CISOs and get that information, but you could reach out to their team members, right? Or you could reach out to the partners. You have to do some due diligence. You know, the kind of legwork the sales team and the biz dev teams will do to be prepared, right? So be prepared for those meetings. Also try to have an understanding of the broader vision and roadmap for the CISO and try to understand, you know, how you're going to fit in their world. So preparation is the key if you go unprepared. And if you're, you know, talking about your solution, which is not in context with what the CISO's needs are, what his vision is, you're certainly going to turn him off. And the other important thing is when talking about traction. Every CISO wants to know whether your product is being used by other CISOs, especially ones that they might know. So you have to be careful about that. It's not very hard to anticipate what the network of a CISO is going to be. If he's based out of the Northeast, he's likely to know, you know, CISOs in those in the area where he resides, right? Because there are lots of local forums that they would be meeting. If you have had interactions with them, real ones, that they are going to be able to reference and validate, then make those references, not just throwing out names and logos, because they will verify that.
That's Mel Shakir from Dreamit Ventures.
Managing the requirements for modern security programs is increasingly challenging and time-consuming. Enter Vanta. Vanta gives you one place to centralize and scale your security program. Quickly assess risk, streamline security reviews, and automate compliance for ISO 27001, SOC 2, and more. You can leverage Vanta's market-leading trust management platform to unify risk management and secure the trust of your customers. Plus, use Vanta AI to save time when completing security questionnaires. CyberWire daily listeners can get $1,000 off by going to vanta.com/cyber. That's vanta.com/cyber.
And joining me once again is Ben Yellen. He's from the University of Maryland Center for Health and Homeland Security. But more important than that, he is my co-host over on the Caveat podcast. Ben, it's great to have you back.
Good to be with you, Dave.
We recently had a special edition of Caveat where we spent the entire episode talking about Apple's announcement that they were going to do some on-device scanning for CSAM, which is child sexual abuse materials. Do I have that right?
Yes.
Yes. And of course, that was quite controversial and has garnered,
put it mildly, yep,
garnered a lot of coverage from folks who are concerned about privacy. There's been an update here. What's the latest, Ben?
So Apple has partially reversed its decision. So I don't think we should over-exaggerate what they're doing here. You know, it's been reported in some news sources that Apple has walked back their announcement. I don't think that's entirely accurate. What they're saying is we need more time to study it. We're going to hit the pause button on our plans. Mm-hmm. You know, we want to figure out a way to monitor for this exploitative material, but in a way that doesn't violate user privacy. So the big objection is to the program where Apple would be scanning on your devices through your photos, your iCloud photos, for sexually exploitive pictures that match pictures on a database maintained by organizations like the Center for Missing and Exploited Children. Obviously, that's an extremely worthy goal. I think Apple thought that they were being good Samaritans by developing this program, and it seems like they didn't really anticipate that there would be a backlash.
Right.
This was a pretty widely publicized decision. They sent out information on the technology to advocacy groups. I mean, you know, to put it relatively mildly, they were kind of bragging about what they were doing.
It was and is a clever technological solution.
Absolutely, to an extremely worthy goal.
Right.
You know, we cannot minimize the importance of keeping this type of material out of the hands of bad actors.
Right.
Because there was this backlash, Apple, in wanting to maintain its reputation as the foremost protector of user privacy, realized that they had gone a step too far. And I think the lesson here is activism matters. This company, you can hold organizations and companies reliable by raising hell when something happens that you disagree with.
Mm-hmm.
Activist groups such as the Electronic Frontier Foundation, EPIC, sprung into action, got petitions together, wrote op-eds, and it had a really big impact. And as I said to you on the Caveat podcast, sometimes, you know, you can have more of an impact on private sector decisions than you can on, you know, your own lawmakers, because there's more accountability. I mean, if you have a problem with what Apple has done, you can move on to the next product.
Right.
And I think Apple is very attuned to that. So that's, to me, the broader lesson here. We don't know what Apple is going to do going forward, whether they will fully reverse this decision or whether, you know, while we're all sleeping on some Friday night, they're going to reinstate the program.
Yeah, right, right. Well, that's an interesting question. I've seen some folks sort of cynically say that it could be Apple's next step is to sort of wait for the heat to blow over and then just quietly enable this in some future software update. Do you think at this point they could get away with that?
I mean, I think it's possible they try to do that. I think because this has already happened and they've already raised the ire of privacy and groups and security advocacy groups,
mm-hmm.
no matter what they do now, there's a watchful eye on Apple's behavior.
Right.
So I don't think we're in a situation where cut 3 months ahead in December, it's Christmas Eve, and Apple, you know, right, tries to avoid the publicity.
Right.
I don't think that's going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, interesting to see Apple walk back something like this, which I think is, we can agree, is sort of contrary to their corporate impulse, right?
Right.
Right. You know, as I said, they came out with this, and I think they thought it was a very clever technological solution to a serious problem, and it is, and the backlash maybe makes them take a closer look at the issue, but maybe hopefully themselves,
right,
as to how they approach these sorts of things in the future.
I think it's a wake-up call for Apple, mm-hmm. And it's really all due to our Caveat podcast, let's be honest. We know right. They listen to it.
That's right. That's yeah. right. And, yeah. Well, I just can't get Tim Cook to stop writing me with the – I just like, all right, Tim, I get it. Just
I know. Leave us alone, Tim.
My inbox is full of effusive praise.
Tim Cook. Yeah.
Tim. All right. So needy. All right. Well, Ben Yellen, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
And that's the CyberWire. For links to all of today's stories, check out our daily briefing at thecyberwire.com. And for professionals and cybersecurity leaders who want to stay abreast of this rapidly evolving field, sign up for CyberWire Pro. It'll save you time and keep you informed. Listen for us on your Alexa smart speaker, too. The CyberWire podcast is proudly produced in Maryland, out of the startup studios of Data Tribe, where they're co-building the next generation of cybersecurity teams and technology. Our amazing CyberWire team is Trey Hester, Peru Prakash, Justin Sabe, Tim Nodar, Joe Kerrigan, Carol Terrio, Ben Yellen, Nick Vilecki, Gina Johnson, Bennett Moe, Chris Russell, John Petrick, Jennifer Iben, Rick Howard, Peter Kilpie, Dave Bittner, and I'm Elliot Peltzman. Thanks for listening.
And now, a word from our sponsor, SixthSense. SixthSense provides award-winning cloud-based automated endpoint and vulnerability management solutions to streamline IT and security operations. With its advanced platform, businesses gain complete visibility and control over their infrastructure, reducing IT and security risks, and optimizing operational efficiency. With SixthSense, you'll get real-time alerts, risk-based vulnerability prioritization and remediations, and an intuitive automation and orchestration engine so you can focus on your core business goals, confident in the knowledge that your enterprise is secure, compliant, and running smoothly. To learn why enterprises choose SixthSense, visit SixthSense.com.